What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because entrepreneurs are the people willing to live a few years like others won't, to live a lot of years like others can't. I've got a special episode for you today with the thought exercise of, if you had to start over, what would you realistically do to get to $1 million in 2 years? I'll share my answer to that at the end of this episode. But first, you're going to hear from Chad Carson from CoachCarson.com and the Real Estate and Financial Independence podcast with Coach Carson. This is an episode I pulled from his show because I thought it was an interesting prompt and an interesting strategy that Chad has come up with. You've heard him on the show before. He was on episode 222 talking about 5 real estate side hustles you can get started with on the cheap. And more recently, just last year, he was on episode 460. We did a side hustle showdown in which he was debating with Cody Sanchez on the merits of investing in real estate versus buying a small business. I will link both of those up for you in the description for this episode. But if you're interested in real estate as a vehicle to early financial independence, definitely go subscribe to Chad's show at CoachCarson.com. Ready? Let's do it.
I was recently asked to speak at a panel at a local real estate meetup, a real estate investor association. And on this panel, each of the people had already accumulated millions of dollars in real estate, but they were all given a challenge, a scenario. And the challenge was this: let's say that you have lost everything, all of your properties, all of your money, all of your network, everything that you've built up over the years, except for one thing, what's left in your head. So your knowledge and your experience. And you're dropped into a brand new city. You move with your family or whoever you live with. You're dropped into this brand new city with no contacts, with no existing marketing, with none of what you have as a benefit now. And you're given a challenge. In 2 years, you've got to make $1 million starting from scratch with nothing but your knowledge and the experience that you've gained in the past. That was the challenge. And in this podcast episode, I want to share with you my thinking and my answers behind that challenge. I'm going to tell you what I would do. I thought about this and I've kind of brainstormed. Then I'm also going to give you sort of like a replay, like you'd see on football or basketball, a color commentator. I'm going to tell you why I made certain choices. And I'm going to change the scenario around a little bit to try to help you, if you happen to be early in your own real estate career, your financial career, to give you some of the insights on why I did certain things. Let's get started. Welcome to the Real Estate and Financial Independence Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Carson. You can also call me Coach, and this is a show all about getting out of the financial grind so that you can do more of what matters. Whether you're a brand new listener or a longtime listener, it's always an honor to have you here for another episode. So I've already previewed the title of today's episode, but I'm calling it How I Would Make $1 Million in 2 Years Starting from Scratch. Sort of a bold assertion. I hope the story and my thinking is helpful for you today. So I want to set this scenario up in a little bit more detail. I don't have any money, a lot of money in the bank. I actually do have a constellation, they told me, of about 6 months of basic living expenses. So I'm just going to call that $3,000 per month. I know that depends on where you are, what basic expenses mean. But let's say I had 3,000 times 6 months. That's about $18,000 that I can use to help me survive. Or if I get more money somewhere else, maybe that can be a little bit of seed money. And I remember I have my knowledge, I have the things I've learned, and I'm going to say that, and they didn't tell me this, but I'm going to say I have basically good credit. I don't have like excellent credit, but let's say I have like a 650, 700 credit score that I'm going to probably work on improving over time, but that's not going to be my main benefit, my main asset that I have. I didn't kill my credit when I lost all my properties. Let's assume I didn't kill my reputation either, that, you know, maybe I just had to give them all to the lenders. Had to turn them back over, but they were all made whole. But now I just have no money, no resources. And I'm in this new city where I don't know anybody. All right. So that is the setup. That's the beginning. And what I want to tell you, I'm going to get into the details of what I do step by step in this hypothetical scenario, but I want to tell you my overall strategy. Now, the problem and the challenge of this scenario I'm in is how quickly I'm having to build that amount of wealth. So if I had started with $10 million and I wanted to make $1 million, I would just need to make a 10% return, which is actually not that hard if you know how to go out and find good deals. So I feel very, very comfortable if you start with a large base of capital. But I'm starting from zero capital, and I've got to grow that to $1 million. And the thing that's similar to that than a lot of you who are, if you're just starting this business, if you're just starting in your financial journey, that's where you are too. you don't have a big financial base. So what is the theme? And the key theme, the key word here is leverage. So you've heard the old story of Archimedes, who was, I think, a scientist or a philosopher back in ancient Greece or somewhere. And he said that you can use a, if you have a lever long enough, you know, a lever could be like a, something you pick up something really heavy by pushing on the other end of it. And you can do that. If you have a lever long enough, you can lift the entire world. So if you want to do something really big, like make $1 million in 2 years, you're going to have to use leverage. Now, what does leverage mean? I'm going to need to leverage not only money. That seemed like the obvious thing because I'm going to use real estate investing and investing to be able to do this. I don't have that basic capital. So I'm going to have to use other people's money. That's kind of a given to be able to do this. But I'm also going to have to leverage other people's network and relationships. I don't know anybody in this new town. I'm going to have to leverage other people's local knowledge and leverage other people's time. So just think about that. Anytime you're doing anything really, really big, you've got to figure out how to use leverage. That's the key word. Of course, you want to do it safely. Not all leverage is created equally. You don't want to go out and borrow as much money as you can and sacrifice everything else. There are different forms of leverage. So I'm going to talk about how I would leverage. But number one, my overall strategy, I'm going to have to figure out how to use some leverage to do it as quickly as we're talking about. And my general strategy, I'm going to go with what I know. Remember, I still have my knowledge and I have done most of my best heavy lifting, my best leverage with multi-unit apartments. Now, there's nothing special necessarily about them. I tend to like them because they're in the residential world. People need to have a place to live, but that's just what I understand. We've done pretty well with multi-unit apartments, in particular buying multi-unit apartments that need to have value added to them. Like the rents are low and you could do something to increase those rents, maybe improving the cosmetics, maybe adding on different income sources, you know, renting out storage units or renting out extra parking. But whatever the case might be, you're increasing the value of that multi-unit property. There's a lot of leverage and wealth to be made by doing that. So my strategy would be to buy multi-unit properties, but actually would adapt my current strategy, what I've done in the past a little bit. I've always bought single family houses, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. I have a 12-plex in our portfolio. We bought one property that was 28 units. And so I actually like, you know, the philosophy of John Shaw, building wealth one house at a time, buying, getting big on little deals. For most of us, and in most scenarios, I think that's just fine. And that's what I did in real life because I didn't have to do it in 2 years. But in this scenario where I'm going to have to make a lot of money really quickly, the best form of leverage is to go bigger on my properties. So instead of me buying, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 property, I'm going to be going for much bigger properties in order to do what I'm trying to do really quickly. And so because of that short timeline, and so the rewards for me, for the same amount of time I would use negotiating to buy properties, I could buy a $20 million building with the same amount of time that I could buying a $200,000 building. And this is unique to my situation because I've had practice on hundreds of smaller properties in the past. So it's kind of a step up at this point. And so that's what I would do. I would focus on larger multi-unit properties. And my strategy to get to that $1 million would be not to own 100% of those properties because I don't have the money to do that, would be to add value to people who do have money. So I'm going to attract money and essentially do what's called a syndication, where I build a group, a company or a group of investors who go in together to buy these bigger properties. And what am I going to add to that? I'm going to have to add my ability to find good deals and my ability to put together a partnership. And I'm going to talk about some of the ways I'm going to build some credibility really quickly, hopefully, to be able to attract people to do that. That's the trick. How am I going to do that? How am I going to attract a large amount of money? Because in my case, I would say I might need to build up a capital base, attract people to invest with me in the maybe $40 million range, like a pretty big number, in order to for me to have a percentage of the profits that $40 million in properties makes. So think about it. If you were the collective investors who put up that $40 million, and let's say that I could buy some properties and build this whole operation that makes you a 20% return in 1 year. Let's say the whole operation makes 20%. If there's 20% on the table, is it reasonable for me as the person who put this whole deal together to make a small percentage of that? Maybe I make 3%, me personally. Maybe there's some other people involved with me. So I'm one of the general partners. Is my portion, is it reasonable that I put this whole deal together that I can make 3% of a 20% return on $40 million? Well, if so, 3% of $40 million is about 3% is $1.2 million. If I made 4% of the total, that'd be $1.6 million. So just pause and think about that. Right? That is my overall strategy to make the money. I'm going to make a lot of investors who have a lot of money, I'm going to make them some money. I'm going to go with Zig Ziglar's old quote, you can get anything in the world you want if you help enough other people get what they want. So these people with money, they want to have safe investments. They want to make a good return on their investment. I'm going to go out and do that. I'm going to talk about how to do that. But then I am going to require that somehow, some way, we're going to put in an arrangement where me, the person who put all this together, is going to make a piece of that pie. So I got to make enough profit for them to have enough left over for me to take my piece. And that's essentially what syndications are. Syndications or larger companies that own real estate, they have operators, they have general partners who make money. Sometimes they put their own money, but not always. In this case, I'm not going to have a lot of money to put into it. So I'm going to have to add a lot of value to them and I'm going to take a piece. So that is my big picture strategy. Use the leverage of other people's money. I'm going to talk about some other forms of leverage, but then I'm going to make a piece of the pie. So now that my strategy is on the table, let's look at what I don't have, because there's a big gap between this vision that I have. I think I know how to do this. I think I can put this plan together, but I lack a lot of things. And one of the first things that I hope you've thought about is, hey, Chad, you've got to survive. Like, you've got to go pay some bills. You got to put food on the table. You have two kids. How are you going to pay for them to eat? How are you going to just survive financially? And I think that's the most important first question. When I did this talk in person, I spent about 5 minutes on this because I think survival, all of us need to put our own oxygen mask on first. That's when you were sitting on the airplane and they're giving you the safety instructions, we all just kind of start reading something or listening. We don't really listen to that. But that's the first thing they tell you. In the case of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first. And that is what we're talking about here financially, is we got to get the financial oxygen mask on first, because I won't make it to 2 years if I can't even pay the bills and put food on the table. And so I actually talked to my wife about this and said, hey, what would we do? What could we do in the scenario where we just got to generate some income really quickly? And we talked about it. My role in this scenario, I think, would be trying to build that wealth to $1 million. I could, if I had to, it was just me, maybe I'd have to focus more time on generating some income quicker. But in our case, we're fortunate enough to have both of us could generate some income. My wife teaches Spanish. She doesn't do that full time right now. She teaches English and Spanish, and she has a master's degree in that. And it's pretty marketable skill. So either getting a high school job or a community college job in this new town would probably be a pretty good proposition, especially if we're flexible on location on where we live. And so our idea would be to take her experience as a teacher and for her to kind of get the survival job. And so she would be teaching, going back into teaching, and somewhere in the $50,000 to $80,000 per year would be my guess on what she could make with a full-time job, plus some health insurance benefits, which is always important and helpful. And so the kind of side lesson to this is that those of you who are in similar situations, where you have a spouse, it doesn't matter what you do in order to make that income in the short term. If one spouse could be working on more of the wealth building, or maybe when you use one salary from one spouse to do the wealth building and the other is just to do the survival, if you can live off that one spouse's income, if you're fortunate enough to do that, that's a great plan. And so that's what we would do. We would, use that money, that $40,000 to $60,000 or $80,000 per year, minus taxes, minus other expenses, and we'd use that to pay the bills. We also need to think about shelter, though. What would we do just to live for somewhere? And I love house hacking. I'm always talking about living in a duplex, living in a fourplex. We don't have a lot of capital, though, to go out and buy a new property. Maybe we could get a loan, but I'd actually lean towards doing something just straight rental at this point. So either just renting an apartment or a house that is in our budget and we can make work. I might also, because I'm going to be out in the real estate industry talking to apartment owners, we might try to negotiate something where we do like a live-in management arrangement. And I share with them that I have a lot of management experience, that I'm willing to live in an apartment if we could get a discount or free rent. And we would do some on-site management. Maybe that means showing some apartments here and there in the evenings. Maybe that means, just reporting things that are going on, meeting a contractor here and there. And so that's a good trade-off for us. Carrie and I could do that. My wife and I could kind of trade that off in exchange for maybe $1,000 in free rent at a place. The other benefit for that for me is we're living in an apartment complex or somewhere in an area that maybe where I'm also hunting for deals and I'm meeting the owners or the managers of these properties. So that's a kind of plan B, perhaps. Instead of me going out buying a property, renting is actually a great deal sometimes because you can get in without a lot of upfront cost. So maybe I do a live-in management arrangement. Maybe we just rent something. Maybe I can negotiate like a master lease where I lease a fourplex, for example, and I, you know, I sell the owner on the idea of me leasing the entire complex and maybe giving them a security deposit or a big security deposit to give them some extra credibility. And then I will sublease out the other ones. So maybe I rent the whole place for $2,000 and then I rent each place out for, $750 a month. So I'm getting $3,000 coming in. I'm paying $2,000 to the owner. That would be a nice big spread. Maybe I couldn't do that well. But there is possible that I could live for free in a place by using the profit from subleasing out other units. So those are just some ideas, some brainstorming. Again, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on that because I got to go big. I got to buy, you know, get this $2 million. But for those of you thinking about survival at the moment, you got to get a job, you got to pay the bills, and you got to get your housing taken care of. And if you can do house hacking or renting or something that makes sense in the short run, that can at least get you shelter over your head and you got your oxygen mask on financially. And now you can start focusing on some of the bigger picture. All right. So our financial oxygen mask is on. Survival's taken care of. I didn't mention before, but I would also, my wife and I would set aside some money out of that $18,000 we have. If she gets a job pretty quickly and we didn't have to burn too much of that $18,000, we would hopefully set aside some money for an emergency fund, just because that gives you that peace of mind that you can go for big, you can take a big swing, you can go for the home run because you have a little bit of a cushion. So maybe $10,000, if $3,000 per month is our overhead, you know, maybe having $9,000 or $10,000 in the bank, that'd be nice. And maybe we burn through a couple thousand of that, just like getting moved and things like that. And so maybe I've got $5,000 or $6,000 left over. Hopefully Carrie got a job pretty quickly and I've got some money left over and I'm thinking big picture. But I have a big gap still between me going out and buying 500 units to, and then building a syndication and attracting $40 million. There's a huge gap between where I am and where I want to be. And I think there's three specific things that I lack. So I do know how to do it. I've done that before, but I actually haven't done a big syndication like that. I'll say that right now. I've done more private lending and smaller scale deliberately. That's just more my strategy. It's kind of keep it small. But in this, I have bought that many properties over time. I've negotiated properties like 500 properties or 500 units and done that in the past. So how could I do that again? Well, I'm lacking right now local knowledge, first and foremost. I don't know about this city that I'm in. I'm lacking a network. I don't have relationships with closing attorneys, with people to help me fix properties up, with people who are gonna loan money, or who are gonna be to finance our deals, or to help me put together the syndication legally, a legal team. So I'm lacking a network. First of all, I'm lacking local knowledge of the market. I'm lacking the network, and then number three, I'm lacking some credibility. You know, all these people I meet here, like they're gonna say, What have you done? Like, who are you? You've lost all your properties. And so I need to build some credibility as well. So let me tell you some of the first things I would do. Number one, to try to help with my local knowledge problem. So in my case, I don't recommend this for everybody necessarily, but I just think it's a good first step. I used to have my real estate license on active status. It's on dormant status now. I don't use it. I'm just ready. I could activate it again in the future. And I think for me in a new city, activating my real estate license and focusing on commercial properties in this case, like larger multi-unit properties, would be a good first move for me to help learn the market. So I would go take the local test. You know, I could go for 30 hours, I think, and go to a local real estate office. They usually do that in 1 week. I would take my real estate licensing course, my education requirements. I would take a test, and then I would interview 4 or 5 brokers who are focusing in the commercial world. So either kind of true commercial properties like retail and office, but also multi-unit family and also mobile home parks and industrial. That all fits under the umbrella of commercial. I would find a brokerage who focuses on commercial, and I would interview all of them to see if there's a fit in for my personality and they're flexible enough. And I would be telling them from the very beginning what my goal is, that I'm thinking big, I'm going to be buying these properties, but I'm also going to be doing some listings or some buyer representation on the side, particularly early on with multi-unit properties. And so I would find a good fit there. And the benefit of having this little office of brokers, other people who have their real estate license, is that I could begin borrowing their knowledge. I could call this person up. I could talk to my broker and say, what's going on in this area? Or how do I deal with this local issue? You've got to have other people you borrow knowledge from. And so just on the transaction space, I'm new to this city, I'm new to the state, what are the laws, regulations here? That's going to be really important to have that team member who in a broker, when you're a licensee under another broker, you have that requirement because they want to make sure you're doing things legally, but they also are a resource for you. And there's other people in the office, hopefully, who I've picked who are also out there doing things. So they have the network. So we talked about that was something I lacked. I could go to some of these other brokers in the office. They already have some buyers looking at properties. And so just be a little bit more of a shortcut to find some other people with money who are looking for multi-unit properties. But what would I do there? Why would I get my license? My plan would be in the first 3 months, maybe 6 months, to actually buy properties for other people and me just make a commission on it. And so I would do that because it's going to force me to learn the market. I'm going to be representing other people and my credibility that I'm going to sell with them is that I've done this before, had lots of transactions in the past. I'm new to this city, so I haven't done any here, but here's my approach. This is how I analyze properties. Here's what I'm going to help you do. And I'm going to listen to them. What are your goals? I'll help you find it. And what I do have, although I don't have all this experience in this market, I have a ton of hustle. I'm going to be doing this full time. I am willing to door knock. I'm willing to talk to people. This is what I did when I first started real estate. This is what I encourage you to do sometimes if you want to do something really quickly is get out in the market. So I know what my buyer is looking for. They're going to tell me I'm looking for a property that has 100 to 200 units and I'm looking in these locations and this type of property. You know, with commercial properties, it's actually a smaller universe of properties. So I might find 30, 40, 50 properties that meet those criteria. And then I would go directly to the source. I would try to call the owner. I, of course, would send some letters or mail, but I might get very creative with my mail. I might send like a big, huge package, like a big box and have it like as colorful as I can. And then have a note inside of that box and full of like, you know, packing popcorn, or maybe it's a gift or something. Maybe it's some chocolate. And I find a way to segue from the chocolate into, you know, this is a sweet gift to hopefully set up an appointment where I can give you a sweet offer on your property. Even if you're not looking to sell, I'd love to talk to you. You know, something cheesy like that, but it gets people's attention. And maybe I have a picture of myself and I say, I have a client who has the money. We're ready to buy. Please give me a call. You know, something creative. You got the key of marketing, the secret of marketing I've always heard is just not be boring. And so I would go directly to the owners of property once I had a client who's looking to buy those, and I would just represent them and I would help them buy a good deal and I would get paid by doing that. But in the process, I'm looking at all the sales in the property. I would probably make a goal for myself to look at the last 50 sales in my market for similar type properties, both smaller properties, bigger properties, and I would go look at every single one of them. I'd make a goal to do that, maybe in a week, and I would study it like I'm studying for a test or for an exam to understand why did that building sell for more? Why did this building sell for less? And with multi-unit apartments in particular, I would look at like a per unit basis. This one sold for $50,000 per unit. This one sold for $125,000 per unit. Oh, this one's new construction and they're leasing this one for, you know, $1,500 per unit. Why is that better? What's the location? What are the amenities that they are offering? And so there's just this intuitive understanding you get of a market the more you study it. And so whether you're me in this situation or you're you in your situation, you've got to study the market. You got to get that local knowledge. You got to build relationships. Even if you don't become an agent yourself, having a local agent on the ground, somebody represent you who understands the market themselves, who can help you with the transaction, is a big deal. I'm just taking that role for myself because I have some bigger, quicker goals in this scenario. But a real estate agent who is worth their salt can really help you with that knowledge piece and with the relationships piece, with the network. Finally, remember what I lacked before I can go build the syndication that I want to do is I also lack credibility. But if within the next 3 to 6 months, I hustle, I do 3 or 4 transactions for my clients, and these are $1 million transactions or $500,000 transaction on an apartment building or a $10 million transaction on an apartment building or some land that they're going to build on, I've now built some credibility. I can now go to the next step and say, this is what I've done. So I've built some local knowledge. I've built my network. I'm starting to do that. In addition to just have that brokerage, I would go to every single local real estate meetup that people with commercial real estate or multi-unit real estate are going to. Maybe there's a breakfast group. Maybe there's a Facebook group. There's also a lot of online groups. Like I'm on Twitter a good bit. There's a real estate Twitter, RE Twitter kind of community who share ideas with each other all over the country on commercial real estate and multifamily real estate. I would go in bigger pockets and talk with people there. I would meet other people, build relationships, because I've just been so impressed in the past with this fact that almost everything I've wanted, every door I've wanted to open for a new goal that I have has come through a relationship with a person. And that relationship, you can't fake relationships. You know, you got to get to know people. You got to talk to people. You got to add value to people. And so it's not just this kind of cliche word of networking. It's more about going out and meeting people and asking, how can I help you? What can I learn from you? Having the humility, no matter what age you are, have the humility to ask people who are successful in what they're doing. How did you do that? That's amazing. Like what are you doing there? People are, I think if you flatter them with your humility that you want to learn, people are usually willing to share. And then if you're also willing to follow up, and if you see some way that you could add value to that person, then do that. And do the small things. Send thank you notes. Put your best foot forward very quickly. When I was new and I was trying to talk to sellers and to banks, I used to have this very thick credibility package, and I had never done any real estate. But I got all my college professors and I got people who knew me personally in the community to write letters of reference for me. And I even showed, like, here's my grades in college, you know, because I just graduated from college. You know, whatever you got, use it. If you've done something impressive, you have some kind of criteria, do that. But you got to build credibility pretty quickly with people if you want to ask for something in return. And adding value, building credibility is what I would do in this case. There's one other, I've thrown a bunch of things at you here. I hope that some of those tidbits will be helpful for you in your situations too. There's one other thing that I would do that's just kind of unique to, I think, the time and space where we are. While I'm doing every bit of that for the first 3 to 6 months, I would document everything publicly online. And that's a little, for some of you might not be comfortable doing that. I'm here talking to you on a podcast, sharing my life a little bit. I do a YouTube channel. I have a blog that I've been doing for years. I've seen the power and the leverage, there's that word again, the leverage of social media for a business purpose. And so there's this idea of scale. How do you reach hundreds of people or thousands of people with a proposition that you have? In this case, I want to attract money to do deals with me. Well, one way I can build credibility and get some scale is by sharing this online. And if you get the right YouTube algorithm, you do a couple of videos or a couple of vlogs, and people start sharing that on social media, it can go viral pretty quickly. And I think this is a pretty interesting story. I would lead with my goal here of making $1 million in 2 years. And I would talk about all these different pieces. Here's what I'm doing. And you know what? I might fail, fall flat on my face, but here's what I'm going to do. And that tension of whether I'm going to fail, whether I'm going to succeed, this almost like this reality TV version of it, I think would make a really good story. And I think I could get some publicity on, you know, some of the national or maybe regional newspapers or TV shows, or it would just make a good pitch in the PR department. And I would kind of build that PR by making my own YouTube vlogs. And it'd be really informal. Like, I'd use my phone. I would carry it around in my pocket. I have a little DSLR camera that I spent $600 or $700 on that I use for YouTube. But at a minimum, I could get like a $20 microphone. I would have my phone and I would just go around with that, and maybe like another $20 little, they call it a gimbal, or just a little tripod that you can set up. That's all I need to do a YouTube channel. And I could get a $60 microphone to do a podcast if I wanted to do that. But I would focus mainly on YouTube and a website and then Instagram or something, some kind of social media, maybe TikTok. Probably not TikTok, because my target audience would be a little bit older for people who are going to invest with me. But I would probably do Instagram. I would definitely do Twitter, and I would do YouTube. And I would put this, so this is like a parallel path that I would have to put the word out. And I'll explain in a little bit why I think that eventually might be helpful. So let's take a pause, just review where we've come from. Remember, step one for me was survival. My wife's working a job teaching Spanish, maybe teaching English at a community college or a high school. We've got our home, our situation taken care of, probably from renting a house or an apartment, or maybe getting some kind of arrangement where we're helping to manage it on site, or we're subleasing the property and leasing out to other people. But we've got our survival taken care of. And then remember from the beginning, my job was to get to understand the market, to build credibility, to build a network. And I did that through getting my real estate license and focusing on the commercial side, the larger property side of real estate. And first and foremost, I wanted to build that credibility and network by buying properties for other people with my license, not with me owning the property. Now, that's not the only way to do that, but I think that's a great way to get started if you have the time and energy and the want to. And I do in this case. And that's, I'm very confident that my knowledge, this is where that those things in my head that I didn't lose really come into play, is that I have done this before. I bought hundreds of properties before. I've negotiated hundreds of times with sellers. I have put deals together. So that's I haven't lost that. And so I can go out and do that same thing for other people. I can just represent them and make a commission on that transaction. And so I can add a lot of value to them. And because I have that confidence of the knowledge and the know-how. If you find yourself being a brand new investor and you don't have that confidence and know-how, it's probably a gap in something you need to learn. You need to go out and learn some of the details of transactions. Maybe you need to start. This is why you start on smaller deals. I've jumped to these big deals because I have that confidence and knowledge. That's why I love making it big on little deals, you know, starting with the small ones where there's a little bit less risk, where maybe you move into a property and put a small down payment and then you walk before you run. But in my case, I do have that knowledge. And so I think I can get up and running. It's going to take a lot of work. I'm going to be hustling every single day, 10, 12 hours a day. I'm going to, doing my editing and videos at night. But my goal is within those 3 months to get some deal flow, to get some transactions coming in so that I can then focus on my goal of building my own portfolio pretty quickly. And I want to try to buy something in the second 6 months of that year for myself. But there's still a big gap, right? I have to build the syndication. I got to have the legal structure to do that. So I'm going to have to bring on some legal help, attorneys to help do that. I'm also going to have to operate that. So I can't do all that myself. I might be the main one negotiating and finding the deals. And in fact, that's what I will do to add a lot of value to this situation. But how are we going to go find all that money? Where are we going to get all that money? So I'm going to need somebody, a partner. And so I'm going to form a general partnership and then we're going to divide up the pie within that general partnership. So that general partnership puts the deal together, operates it, fixes it up, gets it leased, manages the property from a kind of a higher level. And then the limited partners are the people who put up the money. And so one of those general partners is going to have to be somebody who has a relationship, existing relationship with a lot of people who have money. So who is that person going to be? I'm open to what that would be. It might be somebody that I meet through this brokerage. Maybe they have a client who has a lot of money. You'll be surprised how many people out there have money. There's more money in 2021 than there are real estate deals. And if you just network and you have some value to add, there's tons and tons and tons of money out there. I'm very confident of that. And you got to treat them well. You got to keep their money safe. You got to add value to them. But if you got deals, there is money out there. And so I would look for maybe an existing syndicator, somebody who already has raised a lot of money and has done this before. I might also, and here's where my social media thing came in. I have some experience talking to other people and who are also real estate investors, but who do social media. I'm thinking, for example, my friend Brandon Turner has kind of leveraged his platform on Bigger Pockets to start his own syndication company. And they've raised millions and millions of dollars from accredited investors. They have to do everything legally and through the proper structures. But because he has trust and credibility with an existing audience, he's taught people, he's shared stories, he's inspired people. And so there's a lot of people who are like, hey, I would just like to invest with you, Brandon. And so if I can find somebody like that, for the last 3 months, I've been sharing my story on YouTube, I've gotten on podcasts and been on interviews to share my audacious, bold story. I've gotten on the media. Hopefully I've got a little bit of credibility that I can go to a Brandon Turner, to another good friend of mine, Jay Scott, or some of these other people who have pretty big audiences. And I can make the proposition to say, hey, I am forming a new syndication here. I'm going to go out and find deals with these structures, with these numbers. Here's what it would look like. Can I give you a piece of the general partnership if you'll help us raise money? And so that would be my plan, to find that person. And that's going to be a big key person there. And that might be a local person with a lot of knowledge. That might be a Wall Street type person. Might be like an influencer type person who is in the real estate space. But that's going to be a key piece of the puzzle because I don't have that. It's going to be hard to build that kind of following, that kind of credibility in 3 months. So the money person, the operator person, and that operator person would be maybe a contractor, maybe a property manager, maybe another investor who has really good experience executing on the project management of remodeling a property, of turning over tenants, of doing all of that. That's a really important piece. And I've done some of that myself too. I've done all the dirty work on property management. And so I have some experience, but I'm going to be focusing more on the acquisitions and on the big picture vision. And I'm going to still be the main decision maker in this general partnership. And hopefully my goal will be to keep about 30, 40% of the profit within that general partnership for myself, and then distribute the other 60 to 70% to these other partners who come on. So lots of details details there, but that's my plan. And we're going to go execute it for the next 6 months of raising money, of me looking for deals. And that's going to be some timing there of the deal before the money. But we're going to raise money. And then hopefully by the end of that first year, we're going to buy some apartment complexes. And then during the second year, then we're going to be improving those properties, increasing the value of those properties. And if we've done what we set out to do, we have about $40 million or more. And then those properties have now produced a return because we bought some properties that were dilapidated or needed work or the rents needed to go up. But hopefully we are delivering on about a 20% return for our entire partnership, and our general partnership is going to take a piece of that. How that's structured, that's probably more details than I want to get into here, but I'm pretty confident that me, even my personal stake could be a nice portion of that so that I can make $1 million, not necessarily in cash. I didn't talk about that in the beginning. My net worth would be increased by $1 million. It's not going to cash out, you know, for maybe for 5-10 years before we're done with that syndication. But I've been able to start from scratch, build up wealth, build up relationships, and I've done that in a relatively short period of time. So in a relatively short episode, that is a summary of how I would approach this problem that I was given of how do I build $1 million in 2 years starting from scratch. Obviously, a lot of the details here are very unique to me and to my situation. If you're starting, you might not have that knowledge right up front. But there are some common themes. There are some lessons that I just want to go over real quickly. And you're welcome to ask. If you're watching this on YouTube, I would love to hear some comments or questions from you as well. And I'm happy to answer those. I know there's some details I probably didn't cover. Maybe there's some assumptions I made that you might be questioning. That's great. That's why we have discussions. Let me know if you're listening to the podcast on your podcast player. You can send an email to podcast@coachcarson.com, or even better, go to the link in the show notes. The quickest way for me to respond is leaving a comment on the show notes, or even better, on YouTube. And I check those pretty often. But I'd love to hear from you is my main point. But I want to just, this is like watching game film in a football game of debriefing. You know, what were some of the big takeaways the important themes that I hope you take away from that? The first part was survival, that we all go through this financial stage of survival. Sometimes it takes a while. And, you know, just to be honest, all of us start from different places in life. If you're having to really dig yourself out of poverty and you have not a lot of resources in your family, you know, just you getting to the point where you're surviving financially could be a major accomplishment. So don't compare yourself to other people. If you've gotten there and you're surviving now and you're just paying the bills, but you know how much you came from, you had to pay off that much debt, or you had to get out of a place where things are not good personally, mental health wise, whatever the case might be, you know, pat yourself on the back. Like, surviving financially is a major accomplishment. And so that was my first message. Just take care of survival first, put your own oxygen mask on. The other thing was that I had the basics of any real estate business strategy are finding deals and finding money. So you might have noticed that throughout that whole story was that I had to find deals that were going to work for my strategy, and I had to go out and find other people to put up the money. And I didn't even talk about bank financing. And we would go out and buy a certain number of units, maybe 500 to 800 units. We would have some capital from our equity partners. We would get some bank financing. We'd have a mixture of debt and equity. So that's another detail I didn't mention. But deals and money are what it was all about. But to get deals and money, you have to have those three things that I talked about. You got to have local knowledge, or maybe knowledge of real estate transactions in general. I had some of the general knowledge. I didn't have the local knowledge, but knowledge is critical. That's why I educate. That's why I'm a teacher. And that's why I do this podcast every week, because it's such a critical piece of it. But the second thing is relationships. You can know all you want theoretically, but if you don't go out and meet people and build trust with people and build relationships, this is a people business. In real estate, but really any business, you got to have a network of people. You got to have a team. You got to have people you trust. So knowledge, relationships, and then credibility. Your reputation, the trust you have with other people is incredible. It's one of your biggest assets. On the corollary, about doing something that breaks people's trust in you and loses credibility is going to be one of the worst things you can do. And so guard your credibility, guard your trust with people more than anything. I would rather lose a bunch of money than lose credibility with one of my business partners or somebody who's loaned me money. So guard credibility. And if you don't have it yet, do something to build it. I built it by going out and finding deals for other people to say, hey, look, this is what I've done. And I also documented it social media. That was a kind of a unique thing for me and my knowledge of building online businesses as well. And that's how I did it. And I think the two big takeaways throughout that, the big levers, the things that helped me do what I was talking about. Number one was just leverage itself. I got to leverage other people's resources, knowledge, money. That was a big deal. If you want to do something really big, you've got to use leverage. You got to use it carefully, but that's what I had to do. The other thing was hustle, basically taking massive action. There's no substitute for just getting out and getting it done. And there's nothing I've ever seen that's worthwhile, whether it's in sports, a job, investing, building entrepreneurship type projects, social projects that don't involve a lot of sweat, blood, tears, hustle. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? You have to pay your dues. If it was easy, if you could just press a button and it just got done automatically, everybody would do it. It wouldn't have any value to us. We wouldn't appreciate it ourselves. So leverage and hustle, taking massive action were some big deals. And I skipped over a lot of details, the mistakes that I would have made. It's okay to make mistakes. If you're a brand new beginner, just make your mistakes quickly, make them often. I probably made mistakes in that scenario. I met the wrong person. I made an offer on the wrong property. But an experienced person who knows how things happen, just keep moving through those. They learn, they chalk those up as lessons. We all make them, keep them small. Don't make huge mistakes where you're losing everybody's money, but find ways. This is what entrepreneurship's all about. Find ways to take risk that you can live with and then keep moving. So it might be I put an earnest money deposit on a place and if I lose that earnest money deposit, I lose a couple $1,000s, but it's not the end of the world. I'm not losing the rest of my money, but you got to put that earnest money down on an offer before you can actually buy a deal. So that's just a very specific example. So I hope this lesson has been helpful for you, this scenario. In the future, if you're interested, I might be also interested in doing another scenario that's a little bit more realistic for maybe what some of you are dealing with. Maybe the idea is that, hey, instead of 2 years, how would you, starting from scratch, make enough money to live off of in the next 5 years or 10 years? I think I would approach it a little bit differently there. And I think that's more of a real life scenario. I mean, when do you ever have 2 year deadlines coming up against you unless you owe money to the mafia or, some other weird situation? Like, so that's not very realistic that you would have to push it that hard. But if you're interested in that, let me know. Send me an email at podcast@coachcarson.com. Leave a comment in the YouTube video if you're watching this on YouTube. And just want to thank you for listening to this and inspiring me to bring this to you. Some of my future episodes, I'll be back to interviewing some other people. But every once in a while, I'll come back and do some of these solo episodes as well. If you're new here, please consider hitting the subscription button in your favorite podcast player or on YouTube so that you'll be notified each Monday morning when I come out with a new episode. And I also like to ask a favor of you. If you like this show, if you've got value from it, there's a few different ways that you can help me to support the show and to keep it going. The first is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. People read these reviews when they're deciding to listen to the show, and it helps us to get discovered. The second thing you can do is to subscribe to my email newsletter at coachcarson.com/REI toolkit. New subscribers get my real estate investing toolkit, which includes things like a closing checklist, a deal worksheet, a tenant screening criteria checklist, and lots of other goodies that'll help you on your journey to financial independence. You can get it all for free at coachcarson.com/REI toolkit. The third thing you can do to help me and the channel is to consider joining one of my online courses, which is where I personally teach and provide tools for you to become a successful real estate investor. There are some courses that are always available. These include topics like rental property analysis, where I share how to use my spreadsheet that I use to analyze deals. I have Real Estate Deal Finder, which is all about how to find off-market real estate deals. Contract to Closing, which is all about the paperwork and the due diligence process when you buy a property and be getting more confident on that. And then also each spring and fall, I have my premier course in a community called Real Estate Deal School, which is where I hold your hand and help you step-by-step to buy your next deal. You can find details on all these courses at coachcarson.com/courses. And of course, thank you to all of you, the listeners of this show. This show exists because of you. It exists for you. And I really appreciate you being here each and every week to listen to another episode. Everything I've shared with you in this episode has been for general education purposes. I've not considered your specific situation or risks. So before buying your own investments, be sure to consult a financial, real estate, and/or a legal professional. Until next time, I'm Chad Carson. You can also call me Coach, and I'm your host for the Real Estate and Financial Independence Podcast, which is all about helping you get out of the financial grind so that you can do more of what matters. See you next time.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that breakdown from Chad. Again, you can find him at coachcarson.com and be sure to check out his Real Estate and Financial Independence podcast if you want to learn more. Now, as promised, my thoughts on the same scenario, 0 to 1 million in 2 years. the path that I would take, given the skills and experience I've accumulated, would be a little bit different from Chad's. My focus would be on building out a content website monetized with affiliate relationships and possibly advertising or digital products. To get to that $1 million payday, assuming I sell it at the end of the 2 years, it would need to be earning around $25,000 a month, which at a 40x multiple would be that $1 million exit price. And that might seem like a tall order, but we've seen from some Side Hustle Show examples of website builders who've hit that income level on that timeline. Rosemary Groner from Busy Budgeter comes to mind. Alex and Healy from Finn vs. Finn come to mind. Now, what would the site be about? Well, I've got a bias toward personal finance and entrepreneurship, but let's say that stuff is off the table. Ahrefs actually recently published their picks for the top six affiliate marketing niches that the author said were just crying out for a market leader. Those were vacuum cleaners, hotels with jacuzzis, travel car seats, golf equipment, headphones and earbuds, and zero waste. A few of those are actually really interesting to me. Vacuum cleaners, I don't care so much about. Hotels with hot tubs sounds like an awful data entry project, but travel car seats could be interesting. I've got some firsthand experience on how sucky it is to be lugging huge car seats through an airport. There's a clear product recommendation path for affiliate income here. Lots of comparison post opportunities. This company's model XYZ versus this company's model XYZ, that type of stuff. But if I were to tackle it, I might go a little bit broader just for the sake of my own sanity to say, you know, maybe travel with kids in general, because that opens you up to talking about luggage and packing and destinations and other travel tips and credit card hacking. And you know, maybe you start with the car seat stuff and you branch out from there. From an affiliate standpoint, Amazon is probably your major partner, which does make me a little bit nervous, but there are other car seat sellers as well. I've been playing a bit more golf lately, so the golf equipment niche could be interesting. What worries me there is it's a hobby niche, so that may mean more competition. Also, people like Sean Ogle from Breaking 80, they're pretty well established, though that doesn't mean there's not still room to come in fresh. Headphones and earbuds, I'm definitely not an audiophile enough to plow into that niche. The zero waste niche does check a lot of boxes. First of all, it catches a rising tide. It piggybacks on this trend of growing environmental consciousness. It has this broader social mission. And at first glance, I was like, well, what products do you recommend that are zero waste? Like, how are you going to earn affiliate commissions if nobody's buying anything? But the niche is, it's about playing the substitution game. It's about sustainable living. It's about ditching single-use products for stuff with a longer lifespan, swapping out plastics for other materials. I think it would be a cool project to tackle. From there, it's about building out a body of content, trying to publish really several high-quality posts each week, kind of following the framework that Brandon Gailey laid out last week. If you come in and you're intentional and strategic about your growth, it's definitely feasible to have a $1 million asset on your hands at the end of 2 years. A big thanks to Chad for sharing his insight and letting us play his episode. Curious to hear your thoughts on this scenario. What would you do? What would you do to go from zero to $1 million in 2 years? Let me know, nick@sidehustlenation.com, or hit us up on Twitter @AnLoper for me, @CoachChadCarson for Chad. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.